This is Off the Record, the official podcast of the Erie Otters. Hello and welcome in. So glad you've joined us. Trevor Cabea joined alongside my co-host Mario Bruni. Mario, how are we doing today?
Doing good, Trev. You know, get to interview a great guest today. We've got our boss, Sean Bednard, with us here tonight. So it's going to be a fun show. I think we're really looking forward to it, getting ready to go and getting to talk about him and, you know, the season so far with him as well.
Absolutely. You said it right there. Our guest for Off the Record today is none other than the voice of the Erie Otters, Mr. Sean Bednard. Sean, how we doing? Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, we're great, but I do have to condemn you guys a little bit because you did not say that you were the award-winning hosts of Off the Record. Congratulations to you guys, by the way. The Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters certainly knew who they were awarding. Big honor for the Erie Otters to be able to have had you guys be the award winners.
Absolutely. A big honor for us as well. We couldn't have done it without you, Sean. With the opportunity to do the game. Such an honor to be recognized by the PAB as the best coverage of a local sports event. So Sean, thank you so much. And what an honor it is to have received that award. And we're talking to an award-winning broadcaster here as well.
Well, yeah, you know, I've had my fair share down the gamut of some recognition and some awards. But, you know, I think the most important thing is not the accolades or, you know, the rewards or the awards that they come. But it's really about the experience and the experiences that come with the profession. And I'd say any of the awards that I've won during my career would be, you know, second behind all the fun that I've been able to have here in pro hockey, major junior hockey, and obviously with great guys like you.
You know, you talk about a lot of fun that you've been able to have, and I guess we can tie that into how did you get started with broadcasting? Where did you kind of fall in love with it? And, you know, when did that dream start for you?
It's kind of a dual role answer in a sense. When I was growing up, I wasn't like huge into sports. I was a hockey fan because if you're born in Michigan, you learn to love the Red Wings and then you learn to breathe in that order. So I was already embedded into it, not to mention the first 2 years that I was alive, the Red Wings ended up going back to back. But so that love of hockey was always ingrained in there. And it really showcased a lot more when I was able to watch the Flint Generals or the IHL, be able to see hockey in kind of its not highest of highlights, more of its lowlights, and, you know, see the passion that you could have from 15 people being in an arena in early December of 2009 to 6,500 standing room only mid-May 2010 on a playoff run for the Generals in what would ultimately be their final season. So, you know, from there, it really captured my love and interest in the sport even more. And I think the other part of it, too, is that my dad growing up and he shared with me letters that he's written from back in the 80s of when he would be doing class assignments and they'd say, what's your dream career? What do you want to do? And he sent me the letter and I can almost remember it verbatim. It was like, my aspiration is to be a sports broadcaster and to make $100,000. And wouldn't you know it, 40 years later, Dad, I'm still chasing that exact dream that you had. That's one thing, but my dad always said, and I didn't know that he had had that buried until growing up watching Tigers games in the summer. He would always say, oh, you know, that's what I should have done. You know, I should have been one of those guys. I everything they're about to say, I just said, you know, that could have been me. And, you know, I always kind of thought, like, as I was starting to get more into sports in early middle school into high school, I was like, you know what? Like, I like talking, like I like sports. Like, why don't I go for that? So I really fell into luck in the fact that my high school, Davison High School, is a nationally recognized, nationally awarded, basically a breeding ground for legendary broadcasters of the last, you know, 20, 30 years. So I just got lucky in the fact that that's where I was, you know, raised in Davison, Michigan. So I was able to learn under the tutelage of the legendary Randall W. Scott III, cut my teeth there between video editing, audio editing, being a on-camera host, play-by-play, color commentary. You know, I think from there, it really helped me to develop my voice for one, but I think it brought out a lot of confidence for me too, because I always could talk. You can ask my preschool teacher, Miss Adams, who I think to this day still is not a fan of me. I could certainly talk, but it's talking in a way that is beneficial and insightful, and most importantly, above anything else, something that you want to listen to. So I was able to cut my teeth there, go to Central Michigan University, just continue to hone my craft, really fall into the hockey world, and start a college club hockey network up there with Tyler Marcotte, who most recently was with the Houston Texans as a video producer. And we were able to develop something that went from the two of us draining our bank accounts in college to a 30-person employment network covering three teams, being the host of nationally recognized preseason shows, postseason shows, and covering a whole lot for the ACHA that up until sophomore year of college when we started, I didn't even know existed. I thought college hockey was the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Western Michigan, and then those teams out in the Northeast. It's been a funny road in a sense, but I think it all fell into line in such succinct ways that now it ends up that the building that I graduated in, what was formerly the Pirani Events Center, which then became the Dort Federal Credit Union Events Center, which became the Dort Financial Center, the building where I graduated high school, is now a building that I go to on a regular basis to call hockey games for the team that I work for currently. So, you know, life has a funny way of coming full circle.
Yeah, you know, Sean, you know, you talk about that career, and before you got to the Otters, where exactly did you start kind of more with broadcasting? I know you've said that you've worked with the Fayetteville Marksmen, some other places around the hockey, professional junior hockey. So a little bit about that as well.
As essential and bedrock as my time in high school was to really cut my teeth, develop my voice, and, you know, ultimately become what would be the base level broadcaster, I would say that more importantly than anything was being able to go from a generalist to a specialist in college with hockey specifically. The development that I was able to get there from going from CMU D3 to CMU D3 and D2 to CMU D3, D2 and women's hockey, ultimately moving up to become the chief of broadcasting for the ACHA D3 and overseeing all broadcast operations, nationals, broadcast teams, hosting preseason shows, postseason shows, midseason shows, and work that to this day, I'm still incredibly proud of and proud of the team for what we were able to do. I always had that bug where I was like, okay, this is great. I love this. What's next? And it started out really early for me, to the point where sophomore year of college, I'd already started reaching out to teams and like, okay, what can be the next step here? And my journey kind of started at least becoming real junior year of college when Dom Hennig, the then voice of the Flint Firebirds, who had been a mentor of mine and a colleague of mine for some time at that point, had reached out and said, I have bronchitis. I'm not going to be able to do the games this weekend. I need you to come down to Flint and the opportunity is yours to grab the headset if you want it. And from there, you know, there's one thing in being your own boss, in a sense, your own man, and, you know, creating something without critique or an audience that's more favorable because they know that without you, there wouldn't be anything. But so to go to something that was so established like the Firebirds and Dom Hennig, you know, setting the base for broadcasting, going there and being able to translate what I was doing for club hockey into major junior hockey, it opened my eyes to like, okay, like I'm not just like messing around anymore. Like there's legitimately something, there's potential here. And like from there, that was, I would almost say like a catalytic moment for me where I thought, you know what, like, okay, let's get at it. So junior year, right after that, I said, okay, I don't just have high school experience and club hockey experience anymore. Now I can put three letters next to my name, O, H, and L. So I started reaching out to teams immediately because I was like, hey, like young, hungry kid really wants the opportunity and willing to work for dirt cheap kind of mentality. Like, give me a headset, I'm going to travel. And that's where I ran into an emerging team in the Federal Hockey League. And Scott Brand, the then general manager of the Carolina Thunderbirds, had reached out. And, you know, it was something where we had negotiated. We talked a lot. I helped establish the team before their first season a lot with the media and public relations side. And it was incredible experience for someone who was still in college to manage a team website, manage a lot of a team's social media, and kind of create the media presence for them. And it got to the point where I was looking to transfer to Winston-Salem State University and finish out my college degree there and, you know, get to work immediately. And ultimately, logistics just didn't work out for it. It turned into a let's, you know, see if this is something available later kind of thing. Senior year came, got a lot more experience, probably did just that season alone, close to 150, 200 hockey broadcasts. And I said, okay, like, I know without a shadow of a doubt, like, when I'm done here, when I graduate from here, I'm stepping into a role in hockey. Like, I'm taking no bars held about it. Still had Scott and the Thunderbirds proverbially in my pocket, I'd say. They had hired somebody who was doing a good job down there. I'd done the research too. It was like, okay, like, I want to find a team that needs me. Like, I don't want to just step into a role. I want to create something. So I was like, okay, well, I have to come to terms with something. I'm a college club hockey broadcaster. I don't have nothing to my name besides two games in the OHL. I reached out. I was like, okay, look, if I could start in pro hockey at not the lowest level, then I feel like I'd be getting somewhere. So did a lot of research, found the Fayetteville Marksmen of the SPHL. They did not have anything on their website, on their social media, nothing about a media network, radio, broadcasts, anything. So I was like, that's an open door. They were going through some changes internally between ownership and front office shifts. And it ended up being, I applied for a job that I created basically in December of 2017. And after a couple of big interviews to start with the VP and people who would ultimately be my boss, who ultimately moved on, a little bit of radio silence there for a little bit. And I'm like, okay, like, maybe this isn't the one for me, and got back and talked. It worked out that the Thunderbirds position had opened up, and I was like, okay, like, you know, like, this is a really good starting point. Winston-Salem's there. And then I'd say at the 11th hour, here comes Chuck Norris, not the Chuck Norris, not the karate guy, the owner of the Fayetteville Marksman. He says, hey, like, I'm not going to do my Chuck impression because it just won't amplify the same. But he said, you know, basically the old owner was who you were talking to, and he really endorsed a lot of your stuff. And I don't find a need for a broadcaster, but I want good people on my team. And I think you have a skill set that we can mold around and create something with. But I want you to know, broadcasting is going to be the very bottom of your priority list. And for me, I heard, ooh, pro hockey position with broadcasting, and immediately signed and said, I want to get there. A couple months later, August of 2018, I'm down there. So unbelievable tons of experience down there. Grew a lot as a person, as a professional. Ultimately become a Southern boy, in a sense. So cut my teeth in a lot of ways. And it was some hard seasons. It was a staff of, at its maximum, five. And at its usual, 2 to 3. And there were long nights, long, long off seasons and long seasons in preparing. By the time that I left there, I knew it was on the best terms possible, because we worked our tail off to develop something down there that now is becoming something turnkey, where people know, recognize, and respect the Marksman name. So, you know, and that became a point where there wasn't always broadcasting opportunities. You know, there were weekends where I wasn't able to travel because I had commitments back in the office that, frankly, I became at one point the interim director of ticket sales for the Fayetteville Marksman, which meant that I couldn't take the trip to Quad City because I needed to figure out how to print out 6,000 tickets for our Education Day game, 4,000 of which I had sold. And then a snowstorm, and I use that term very loosely, 3 centimeters of snow were expected to fall, and the whole game got kiboshed, and 1,100 people ended up coming out in the most defeating moment of my life. That meant, too, that when we moved on from our public address announcer, that the heir apparent was yours truly, because I know how to talk into a microphone. So that's how, ultimately, who became the next in line for the Fayetteville Marksman broadcast position, Drew Blevins, ended up cutting his teeth. And it's this connective way. And I think that's what's most important about broadcasting, is always having this network and this web. So he filled in. He was the voice of the Marksman, and I was the voice of the Crown Coliseum. COVID happened, and that shook everything up. And there's no secrets about that. But the owner down there, Chuck, again, you know, they said, we're going to retain you. We're going to keep you around, because when this comes back right, we want to make sure that we have everything straight. So I was very thankful for that. We worked a lot during COVID to be able to make sure that things were set straight and right, and was able to still get broadcast opportunities thanks to one of my favorite Southern homes, Macon, Georgia. Fine folks at the Macon Mayhem had allowed me to moonlight, in a sense, and was able to call a lot of games, continue to cut my chops, and ultimately Kelly was able to keep fresh enough for the time that when the Erie Otters positioned open, as Aaron Cooney was able to move on to the goals and now the Kings, that I was able to have fresh tape, a hunger in my belly and a fire to move up that resulted in a perfect marriage. And all that to say, here we are, Erie, PA.
Can you kind of talk about the story of getting hired by the Otters, what that process was like, and also kind of talk about what your time in Erie has been like so far on a personal level?
Early winter time. It was just me and my boss in the office, and I was just walking around the arena. I just finished up something and wanted to take a quick 5-minute breather, and seeing Dom Hennig again, who becomes a connective thread in this story, had retweeted that Aaron Cooney had announced that he was moving on into his bigger, better position in the AHL and with, you know, the opportunity to be a director of broadcasting up there. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's really cool. Dom obviously has spoken highly about Aaron. Then I was like, ding, 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 Ontario Hockey League opportunity back in the north. I was like, okay, like, let's get it together. So went on the Otters website, did some research, found Jamie's email, and immediately had sent an email to Jamie saying, these are my credentials. This is, you know, what I've done. Here's my website. Like, you know, really would love to get into the OHL. I've had a taste of it, and now I want the whole bite. Think I'd sent another email or two, and it just not heard anything back. And I'm like, you know what? That's sometimes how these things go. In talking to my girlfriend at the time, now fiance, I was like, man, like, Erie would be cool. Like, they got, you know, this basically an island that's right off the North Shore. I knew about the Seawolves because I'm a Tigers guy. And I was like, there's a lot of things that are nice about it. And they play Flint, they play Saginaw. So it's like going home a few times a season. It's back in Michigan. But, you know, I was like, it just wasn't meant to be. And then it's 5 o'clock on a Friday, and I was leaving work. I was going to head home, enjoy a nice, relaxing weekend. And I get a text from an 814 number, and it says, can almost say it verbatim, it was, hi, Sean, this is David Brown. I'm the general manager of the Erie Otters. Wanted to talk to you about our open position. When would you be available to talk? And I was just like shaken, and I sent back a text. I was like, I could do it right now. And he was like, okay, well, not right now. I have to get everyone together. And I was like, well, how about first thing tomorrow morning? Like, I'll be ready to go. It worked out that way that Jamie, Chad, and Brownie all it went in on an off day, you know, during COVID, and ended up getting on a Zoom call with me. And I've said this a billion and a half times, but I knew in the first 30 minutes of that phone call or that Zoom call that I wanted to go to Erie. I just could tell the character of the office staff. I could tell the way that they treated their people. And I could tell that they just had a high class culture. And I was like, oh man, like, this is something. Like, there's something special here. And I felt really good. Like, I feel like I'm a strong interview for positions. And for this one, I feel like I'd hit a walk-off grand slam, and had immediately sent back a whole portfolio of like, hey, like, this is potential work. And like, this is what stuff could look like. And they'd gotten me connected with Route 66, which is the Erie Otters character development and personal assessment evaluation. And it was kind of an idea of getting to know me outside of interview, like, who do I view myself as, which I thought was really cool. And I think it's important to be able to have a sense of self-awareness. I did that, and I was like, I've got to be in, like, 100%. And, you know, then I sent back an email a few days later after I sent my portfolio and everything, and was like, hey, just want to follow up. Like, really love the conversation we had, you know, would love to see if this is something that could be possible. And Brownie had sent back a message, which understandably so, basically it said like, you know, we're still in COVID. We're still trying to figure out what the next season, what our plan for it is going to be. I want to make sure that you understand that this could be a process. And I'm like, yeah, like, I get that. Like, I'm not in a rush. Like, I need something, but I'm just so excited about this opportunity. So I played the patience game. Ended up being that I did get an email a few weeks, maybe a little over a month later. It was early April at this point, and a few more conversations with Chad, Jamie, and then with Brownie, and then with all three of them again. You know, ultimately, we were able to make X's and O's happen. And on May 1st, 2021, I officially signed my contract to become an Erie Otter. And a little over a month later, I moved to Erie, PA, and I have called it home ever since. And I, frankly, everything that I had felt on that phone call ended up being 100% the gut feeling was correct. It's a high class culture. They care about their people in the Otters organization. They take care of their people. And, you know, frankly, it's something where I wake up every single day and I'm like, I want to make that next big thing happen here in Erie. Like, I want to continue to make everyone realize on the outside looking in that the Otters are exactly how I feel on the inside looking out. It's been tremendous. It's been a perfect marriage from my perspective. I certainly hope that that feeling is mutual from the Otters to me. I couldn't be luckier to have ended up here in Erie, PA, and I hope to be here for a long time.
And Sean, you know, helping the community has really been something that you've kind of pushed and the team has kind of pushed in the last few years coming out of COVID to help the community in any way possible. How is that for you? Is that just another thing on the resume that you help a business out, or is that kind of a personal thing as well, kind of getting your face out there and getting the organization out there as well?
A lot growing up, community service was a big thing pushed by my church and pushed by my high school. You know, sometimes it was washing dishes for the food bank, or sometimes it was really rewarding stuff like being able to help raise literal tons of food, you know, just help out in other areas around the community. And I liked the feeling that it provided, and not just the intrinsic or interpersonal feeling, but knowing that something that I was able to be a part of actually mattered, actually made a difference. And I think that kind of got buried in me for a little bit. And then in college, the captain of the University of Michigan, Flint, had a medical event occur where he was sidelined for the rest of the season. And we had worked with a clothing company in Mount Pleasant that was also owned by one of the players on the CMU team, started an ugly sweater skate for their captain. Not because any of us knew him or played with him, but it was one of those things where it's like, okay, like, why would we not do something if we can't? So through that, we were able to create a shirt that was ultimately a fundraiser item. We're able to do the actual event and raise, I think, $1,500 for someone who had no connection to us. And again, it was just something so powerful and great to be able to do. I learned something pretty early on at CMU during what they called Leadership Safari, which is basically like an added week freshman orientation that's something you had to volunteer to be a part of. And I don't know what my college experience would have been like if I wasn't part of that. So when I got to do that, there was something said that really struck with me and kind of became a mantra for me in a sense. And that was just the idea of give more, get more. You know, the more that you give, the more that you give to people or to organizations or of yourself, the more that you're going to get. And that doesn't always mean financial goods or rewards, but sometimes it's, again, just that feeling and knowing that you've done something and it's getting more life, more experience, more of that positive feeling. And again, you know, I carried that with me a lot. It was always something that meant a lot to me. And in my time with the Marksman, my first year, I did digital marketing and social media. So I was creating all our ads, all our graphics, all our social media content, everything, figuring out how to get people in the building while also, you know, trying to get people to listen to my broadcasts and actually care about our social media. After our first season, we had success, but my owner, Chuck, had sat down with me and said, I think you would be a better fit to be a people person, an ambassador for us in a sense, and kind of be our face in the community and be our community relations guy. And I was like, okay, like, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And he was like, yeah, and I need you to like kind of work with like nonprofits and stuff like that. And it was so cool to be able to go out in the community, be an active face. And for us, especially as the Marksmen, who weren't a recognized brand at the time in Fayetteville, be able to go out there and be like, oh, wow, like the Marksmen are cool because they did a sock and underwear toss for homeless veterans. Like that was amazing that they did that. Or, oh, you know, like they raised this much money for the local cancer center, or just being able to do stuff that actually, again, mattered. I think a big thing that I was taught by Chuck goes back to that same mantra of how is a community supposed to care about you if you don't care about the community? And that stuck with me a lot because it makes sense. They have to care about the community that they are in, because otherwise you're just an organization that comes in and wants, 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 takes, 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 and doesn't give. And that's not the mantra of give more, get more. So in coming here to Erie, they talked about, you know, you've done a lot of community stuff. What do you want to do here? And I said, ultimately, a lot of my goals here are I want us to be that ambassador in the community. I want us to be everywhere doing everything that we can for all the little guys, and not just the little guys, but, you know, helping out this community as a whole. Been able to execute a whole lot, and then in being able to create beneficial partnerships where there's mutual symbioticness and help to grow our organization, yes, but to be able to use our platform, most importantly, to grow others and other organizations, I think that's the most important thing that we can do. You know, whether it has a financial gain for us or not, I think the not is more importantly, because I think just something as simple as utilizing our platform to be able to have a sock toss that raises nearly 5,000 pairs of socks for the homeless community in the winter, and you guys know what Erie winters are like, I think it's, you can't put a price on that. And I think just being able to boost and talk about the amazing work that this nonprofit community does for Erie and in Erie and with Erie, it's amazing. One of my big things when I got here too is I wanted to help kickstart a nonprofit organization for the Erie Otters so that we can have a continued avenue and stream of being able to consciously do good here using and through the sport of hockey. Something that's going to be a long process, but again, I want to be here a long time. I want to do really good things here. I want us to be able to be an organization that makes a difference, and not just because it looks good on paper or makes us money, but because we care. And I've adopted Erie as a home the moment that I got here. The first time that I woke up and I saw the Bayshore during sunrise, I was like, man, like, this is a special place. And I felt that way every morning that I've woken up there. And I want to be able to have this place be better when we all leave, when all of us in the Otters move on, then we found it. And I think through conscious efforts, through work within the community, through philanthropic work, I think we're on a path, but there's so much work left to be done. And I think that's what motivates me every single day, is knowing we haven't even scratched the tip of the iceberg or the surface of the things that can be done here.
Seeing like the nonprofit of the nights that we have on the air is so cool. Like you mentioned, the sock toss as well was such a great promotion. It's just so cool to see those things being executed and the Otters being involved as well. It's just been so cool to see from a fans and from a working perspective as well with the organization. I wanted to ask you too, what has been kind of your favorite moment in the OHL so far? You've worked about almost two seasons now in the Ontario Hockey League. What's been your favorite moment that you've had the opportunity to call? What's your favorite rink and maybe a great story from traveling across the OHL?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's certainly tough. It's been a busy 2 years. Well, I can tell you this much just from mentioning bus trip. We just got done with our 8-game stretch here, and we did the math, and it seems as though we've been on the bus, just physically sitting on the bus for a little over 12 days, just in total hours. So when you think about that, that's something that you start to reflect a little bit, and you're like, that's a really long time sitting in one spot. There's been a lot of fond and positive memories. I would say there's so many memories that have made it so special already. And, you know, I just think about, you know, recently that Sioux comeback win that we had. You know, I saw a stat earlier that said that that was the first 4-goal deficit overcame in the OHL since 2006. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's 17 years since that's happened. And you take it for granted in the moment in a sense, but you also don't, because of the chaotic calamity that comes with it. But, you know, in talking about comebacks, I think about Connor Lockhart and Dan DeMoss in Windsor with zero time remaining to be able to steal a huge win against a team that ended up going to the OHL finals in 2021-22. And I think about the experience this season's been really cool, because this has been the first season I've actually been able to go to all of the arenas. Most recently was able to finally check off Satellite Arena and Barrie off my list, which became OHL ranked 20 of 20 until it becomes 21 of 21 for me next season with Brantford to come in as the Bulldogs. So I think that's been really cool. Again, I'm Michigander. I'm an American. I didn't know anything growing up about a place like Owen Sound, Ontario, Sudbury, Ontario. You know, these northern reaches are cities that have, you know, mass population centers that understand as a name on the map, London, Ontario, Sarnia, Ontario. You know, these are just names until you actually go there and get an off day in London. You get a chance to actually walk around downtown and go to the market right next to the arena. And you're like, man, like, this is so cool. Like, it's work. Yes. But it's almost like being able to be a tourist a few times a season. And I think no more was that more evident than our first trip this season to Peterborough, Kingston, Ottawa. Eastern Ontario has always been something that kind of interested me. And we had an off day between our games against Kingston and Ottawa. And I was like, it was a perfect, beautiful, gorgeous fall weather. And I was like, I don't even care if I specifically do anything. I just want to be around the entire area. And so I walked around basically the entire Commonwealth of Ottawa. We got to go on a guided tour of Parliament Hill, which was incredible. You know, they're doing construction right now that they said is going to be about a 10-year process, if I'm not mistaken. You just take in all this history for a country that's not even yours. And I was so, you know, motivated and inspired and excited about that I was like, you know what? Like, let's keep this going. That I walked across the bridge that connected Ottawa to Gatineau because I was like, you know what? Like, I know about the Olympique. Like, I want to go see another province. Like, why not? Like, it's a beautiful day. There's no reason not to. Just being able to do something like that. I love an off day. I love being able to explore the different communities that we end up inhabiting. And I think that's been something so rewarding. The travel's long. It's not always polite. You know, a 10-hour, 11-hour trip home from the Sioux on a Saturday night, it leaves you a little sleepy on the Sunday, but you know, it's worth it. And I'll tell you, as far as rinks go, you can't beat the environment at the EIA. Everyone said it, but I'm here just to echo that sentiment that no matter where you go, no matter how many thousands of people are there, you're not going to get an environment like it. There's nothing like it in the OHL. I like sightline wise, I like Flint a lot, and I'm a little biased just because that was the first building I called an OHL game in, but the sightlines are great. The PA announcer's great. Really good environment, especially when they can pack the building in there. Guelph has really good sight lines too. I really like that. Internet is certainly a point where I wish it was a little bit stronger. I've never been too upset about going to London. I think the press box is great. Mike Stubbs is one of the best in the league. He's such a nice guy. I recently went to Oshawa earlier in February. That was my first time there, and I got to walk across the entire blue line suspended roughly two stories in the air to a cool gondola, look down and be able to call a game alongside, you know, Jack Moore there. So there's a lot of great spots here, and everyone has their own personal favorites. And I'll tell you, I've even got a ranked list going right now of best spots and worst spots in the OHL. And not that there's any bad spots, but there's certainly better ones than other ones. And that goes for two terms. There's one for press box and just overall ability to be able to broadcast a game. Secondary, which is very important as a broadcaster, but very seldom talked about, is accessibility to use a bathroom. And I can tell you where the best is. And I can certainly tell you in this league where the worst is. And you have to walk across the entire gondola in Hamilton and have to go down basically two stories to be able to get to a bathroom. You better hope that you got some stuff in the intermission to be able to cover. So there's been nothing short of awesome experiences in this league. I've loved every trip, every travel, even if the result hasn't always been my favorite, I've loved it. And I told myself our last weekend of October in my first season, where I said to myself, as I was eating my meal on our way back to Erie, I said, I hope and I pray that I never take for granted being in this league. I said that to myself as an affirmation. And to this day, as we're almost at the end of season two, I haven't.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of the season two thing as well, Sean, you know, being here season one, now being here for season two, and eventually hopefully more down the line. What's been kind of I've asked the players this, what's the Erie go-to place for you? And then on top of that, what's like the summer and the off season like as well?
I love Erie summer. Erie summer itself is worth no matter how many inches of snow we get here. And it's been a very mild, I knock on wood, winter, very mild winter, only a couple storms here, but the Erie summers are unbeatable. I mean, eat great Tuesdays, celebrate Erie, just going down to Shoreline or Bayfront for a burger or bite and being able to sit and watch the world's third best sunset. It's unbeatable. Or going to Sarah's and grabbing an orange milkshake and going to Beach One and watching the sunset. I love it. I can't get enough outdoor time in Erie summer. And I live it up. So I love it. I've got a few staples here. A few staples indeed. Plymouth Tavern, it's always been a big one. You can't beat the Plymouth Wrap. It's a great spot. They're downtown after sundown for a reason. Cornerstone right there on 38th and Pine. That's a big one for me. Not a lot of spots I don't like in Erie, but if I'm trying to impress somebody, I'm taking them to Shoreline. We're sitting outside, we're watching the sunset, we're getting some good food, maybe some libations, and we're enjoying a beautiful Erie night. And, you know, I'd say those are kind of the top spots. I'm trying to make sure I don't forget Perry's Tavern, of course, Lavery Brewing, of course. The brewery is always a classic one. Brewery and Shoreline, I'd say, are two that I always have to take people to. But yeah, no, there's a lot of go-to spots for me. If you're talking about breakfast places, I haven't been to Lori's Wild Ridge yet, to the disgrace of friend of the show, Abigail Ritchie. And I even have a mug from there, but I've never actually eaten there. My breakfast place of choice, the breakfast place Westside. No disrespect to OBP, the original breakfast place, but there's something about breakfast place on Peach Street that just puts it a notch above. There are a lot of great spots. I mean, Erie's terrific for restaurants, for nightlife, for entertainment. So, and that goes back to just saying that you can't beat a summer night going down to the Barge right there on the bayfront, or days at Rum Runners with some lunches and watching the sunset. Yeah, I love Erie. I soak it up. I love everything about it.
Well, Sean, we can't thank you enough for joining us here on the podcast today. It's been a pleasure having you, my friend, and best of luck throughout the rest of season number two, and we can't wait to talk soon.
Oh, absolutely. I know we'll be seeing each other real soon here, and I appreciate you guys having me on to talk about all the things that make this organization great.
Absolutely. Well, another episode of Off the Record in the books. You can catch us anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere that you can get your podcast, you will find us there. Just search Off the Record. Well, we thank you so much for joining us. For Sean, our guest, for Mario, my co-host, my name is Trevor Cabea, saying so long, and thank you so much for tuning in.